time is it?
Midnight.
Creep never even showed up.
What are you waiting for? Steve McQueen?
Shut up. You got no class, Tony.
She met a guy like you. Now she's dead.
You shouldn't believe in ghosts, P-Brain.
He's a closet! Don't hurt me, please!
Don't keep me waiting for those onions, Herman!
This is all the whiskey you possess?
Everyone out of the way of the bulldozer!
Hot.
Hello, hello, hello. All right.
Hello.
Hello, and welcome to Hello, This is the Doomed Show. I am Richard.
I am Brad.
Folks, my chair is squeaking for some reason, probably because I'm morbidly obese. This is an exciting time to be a Doomed Show host, and presumably an exciting time to be a Doomed Show co-host. Because we're recording about a movie.
We are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What are we talking about, Brad? What is this?
This is Haunts.
Haunts.
H-A-U-N-T-S. Haunts from 1970. I think I've seen 6 and 7.
Yes. The premiere was in August of 1976. So I was about 21 days old.
Amazing.
And then the actual, like, full release was early 77, so it's kind of both.
I'm assuming that your parents took you to see this in Indianapolis.
You know what, though? No. I mean, if this was like a sex comedy, yes. Absolutely. 80s sex comedies. In the 70s, I don't know what they were doing.
Right.
They hadn't realized they needed to introduce their son to the most embarrassing thing of all, which would be looking at boobies with his mama.
Well.
Yep, there's just nothing to say. But this is a Herb Fried joint.
Sure.
And I forgot to look up any trailers. Does freaking Haunts even have a trailer?
You know, I don't remember.
Oh my god. Anyway, folks, I'm going to continue this later. I'm going to look for an actual trailer for Haunts. If I don't find one, then there isn't one. Wait a minute. Yeah, I don't know why this, you'd think this would be one of those Haunts with a nice voiceover guy.
Bah, bah, yeah, bah. Absolutely. I thought of that when you mentioned it.
So Brad, I told you before we started recording,
because,
you know, I like to look for an old VHS tape. And
yes.
I like to read to you the plot synopsis from said VHS tapes because it's fun.
You do. It's true. Yes.
And I found 3. And I'm going to go with the first 2 and then not the third one. The third one is the very special one. So, folks, before I start this conversation any further, spoiler alert, Haunts, as we will discuss at length, is a staple of many budget horror movie compilations. Looking at you, Mill Creek.
Absolutely.
Y'all love some Haunts. So yes, if you have a bunch of horror movie budget compilations, you might already own Haunts and you should watch it.
Yeah.
So, since I've given the spoiler warning, I will now read the first VHS tape. This is the Genesis Home Video Incorporated, and this cover is awesome. It's got a big old severed head on it. Because you know this movie, it's got all them severed heads in it.
Yes.
It says, Haunts. Not everything you see or hear is real or alive. The investigation of a brutal slaying becomes harrowing when the police discover that all clues lead to mysterious events and people who have been dead for quite some time.
Okay.
So, that's the whole thing. That's it. But that's preparing you to question what you're going to see, and that is not cool. You should not do that with this movie. One of the best things about this movie is seeing it and taking everything at face value and then going, oh, snap! All right?
Okay.
VHS tape number 2. This is the Home Media Entertainment. And here we go. The past and present of a tormented woman, Mae Britt, are stirred in the cauldron of her psyche. Murder and rape become reality to her and stimulate the unconscious recognition of past incest. Reality? Fantasy? Fiction? Does the terror she feels involve the whole town? Or is it the fantastic fabrication of her mind that propels her to contemplate suicide? Mae Britt, Aldo Ray, and Cameron Mitchell skillfully enact this starkly emotional story about the horror of the mind. So, this one has a more accurate description of what's in the movie, and then spoils the shit out of it.
Tells all of it.
All right. I'm glad I put up that spoiler warning, folks. I hope you believed me. And now we have VHS tape number 3, or as I call it, holy shit, are you kidding me? This is the Twilight Home Entertainment LTD. Brad, I'm not going to read you the back of this VHS tape. Would you like to know why?
Why is that?
It is one paragraph. No, excuse me. It's two paragraphs on the back of this VHS tape. Two paragraphs.
That's quite a bit.
Yeah, it's pretty big, right? With the tiniest font you've ever seen.
Really?
And the back of the tape, I'm sending it to you right now, is full.
Okay.
The back of the tape is full of words. And this is the one I told you was going to blow your fucking mind.
All right.
It's going to blow your brains out. So here we go. Let me load up my whatchamacallit. Come on. You can do it. Oh, my God. Facebook be hurting. It's hurting.
Nothing's happening, Richard.
It's hurting for certain, like Tim Burton.
True.
Here it comes. It's loading. This is a giant image, so probably should have sent you the small one, but here you go.
All right.
Coming through.
Oh, here. It's already here. Good Lord. Like, this is like a Wikipedia entry.
This is literally the Wikipedia plot synopsis and the themes and this is like the entire story. Folks, I'm not kidding.
No, he's not kidding.
I copied this image of this VHS tape because it looked like the whole plot, and I skimmed it and I said, nope, this is the whole plot, including the ending of the movie. So the beginning, middle, and ending, whole movie. Saved it, dropped it into Adobe Acrobat. And ran the text recognition software. And then I copied the text and pasted it into Word because I wanted to know how many words this was.
Yeah.
This is 720 words, dude.
That's amazing.
What?
I mean, it's literally the entire plot.
Including analysis of what the things mean. Oh my God, bro. What is happening?
Wow.
Oh, boy. So, folks, you know, I saw that and I said, that's good stuff. Why are we doing an episode on it? Oh, see,
yeah, I mean, it's all of it.
I was talking to Death Rattle Aaron the other day, just for funsies.
And
it made me, this movie made me think of him because,
me too.
I wonder if, his old podcast, The Mill Creeps, which I miss very much, the old Mill Creeps podcast from long ago, they covered a bunch of cool stuff from the old budget compilations. And I cannot recall, I didn't ask him. I'll have to start yet another conversation with him because I miss him.
Yeah, I do too. No, I did. I thought of him as well because when I posted about us covering this film, I thought we're probably the only people to cover it in a podcast, except for possibly the Mill Creeps.
I know there's a there's some horror movie people on YouTube who've done it. They've covered it because, you know, everybody on YouTube's got to cover every movie. I love that. It's good for them.
It's true.
So, folks, as I mentioned before, we're going to spoil this movie. And now we're going to actually talk about this movie, even though the VHS tape is out there.
I'm telling you, this is more detailed than the Wikipedia entry.
So Herb Fried, real quick, this guy directed Haunts, and he directed a sleepy little fun favorite of mine called Beyond Evil Boy. Mm-hmm. Oof, not Beyond Evil Boy, just Beyond Evil.
Beyond Evil Boy.
You got to see Evil Boy first before you watch the sequel. Yeah. No, Beyond Evil, 1980, Linda Day George, John Saxon.
I've got it on Blu-ray.
Me too, man. It is so fun. Speaking of things we need to cover on this show, boy, oh boy. They did, he did Graduation Day, which is a big favorite of mine.
He did.
And then he got into a sex comedy called Tomboy, which...
I remember that cover, but I never saw the film.
I am shocked my parents didn't rent this for me to watch with them because...
Kinda too.
You know what? I'll watch it and I'll let you know. Oh,
please
wait.
Do.
I have repressed memories of this.
Yeah.
But
this was right after Hard Bodies.
Oh boy. He wrote this. Thank you for buying me that. I'm still scared to watch it.
Start foaming at the mouth.
But Herb Fried wrote this with his wife at the time, Anne Maurice. And she was his kind of like writing partner. They worked on a couple things together. And she also acted in Beyond Evil, which now I need to look for her in Beyond Evil.
Yeah.
But she passed away super young at 48.
Yeah.
Yeah. So sadly, she is gone. But is he still kicking around? Is he dead too?
Oh,
it looks like he's still. Oh, my God. Guess where he was born. Let me tell Lietta. Hey, Lietta, guess where that director was born? The one from the movie last night. Nope. She guessed Sweden. That's a fair guess. Youngstown, Ohio.
Youngstown.
Yeah, where her family's from.
Oh, well, at least he's like a stone's throw away from Boardman where the air was so thick brown and like soup.
She's just talking about the pollution in the neighboring town. That's good information. Thank you. People be learning on this show.
They do.
Yeah. So this movie opens with some swirly, swirly credits. The word haunts is like, looks like it's going through one of Mario Bava's funky lenses he likes to use.
Indeed.
And boy, we get dropped into some freaking family business. So one thing about this movie, it opens and you're like, oh no, is this like cinema verite shit? Because... we have a family of non-professionals having dinner.
Yes.
I mean, they're professionally eating dinner. They're not professional actors.
No.
And they're being spied on by a black-gloved killer. And I am just dying because, man, they're talking about the little boy wants some jelly. Dad's making sure that people are eating the beans and the greens. Mm-hmm. Bridget, the older sister, she's all put out because... her little brother wants his jelly. And she has to go out to they don't have a fruit cellar. They have a freaking a shed where they keep all their preserves because this must be a cold place to live. And so she's bitching and moaning. She has to go out there. And of course, the killer is like waiting for her.
Yeah.
But she finds a freaking bloody corpse in their shed. And she screams and... almost gets gotten, but then her dad grabs her and protects her when the killer runs off. But what's crazy about this is Pino Donaggio.
Is that not crazy?
So, and this was early Pino Donaggio, right?
This was his first American film he had done.
Wow.
Don't Look Now and, you know, several things.
That's crazy.
But this is his first American movie.
Nice. You see, folks, I used to not be a Pino Donaggio guy.
That's what I think of when I hear old Pino.
I don't remember which film it was. It might have been Tourist Trap that I didn't like. And now, having seen Damned in Venice and A Whisper in the Dark, and of course Dressed to Kill and The Howling and The Fan and Blowout and all this stuff, you know, Body Double, I could just go on forever. I love him.
Sure.
I absolutely love his frickin' music. And I can't imagine who that guy was that I used to be. But
he just didn't know.
I hate that guy. Guy sucks.
Don't hate that guy. He just didn't know.
He just didn't blow.
He blew.
I definitely blew. I'm still blowing. We got this classy freaking score on this scrappy little movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a weird score for him, though. Like, it's his early stuff is less weird. Because he always struck me as super weird. I mean, obviously the music for Tourist Trap is bonkers. Like, that music is wacko. They call the sheriff, and his daughter answers the phone. Who we'll see more. I want to say, is that Loretta?
Will I talk to Loretta?
Yes, you'll talk to Loretta. But she's like, can't they just call back at 9? Because what's Dad doing? Dad is bowling.
Yeah.
There can be no crime in this town while there is bowling.
No crime.
Dad is played by Aldo freaking Ray, dude.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is nuts. 1977, for realsies, after Haunts came out, Aldo Ray was in a movie I've never seen called Haunted.
Okay.
And they're not the same movie. But when you look up Haunts 1977, you get the poster art for Haunted. And I've always been curious to check out Haunted. I think Haunts is probably a better movie since Haunted... Now, folks, I'm not IMDb crazy guy, but this Haunted has a 3.5. That could mean it's a little rough.
Could be.
But, you know, Haunts are the movie of tonight's discussion, 4.8. So, you know, not much better. But anyway, Aldo Ray, before he passed away, that rhymed, hey, 114 credits.
Woo.
Wow.
Busy.
Yes, one of the last movies he did is one I'm very excited to see. I finally picked up a copy of it. It's called Shock 'em Dead.
Ah.
Oh, yeah. But yeah, he's in all kinds of stuff. I mean, just scroll through his freaking credits. You know, it's like Star Slammer. He was in something called Frankenstein's Great Aunt Tilly, where he played the Burgermeister.
Yeah, he did.
He was in Human Experiments. He was in Don't Go Near the Park, which is nuts.
I've not seen any of these movies.
Oh, I recommend. It gets rapey in one part. Don't Go Near the Park has a little bit of rapey stuff in it, but it's very quick, and it doesn't, like, destroy the movie. It's just uncomfortable. Good old Linnea Quigley, when she was, like, super young, is in this awful scene, but it's brief. But yeah, Psychic Killer, The Centerfold Girls... which I just watched recently, and he plays a sleazebag. Oh, my God.
Somebody sent me that.
Oh, dude, I'm sorry.
No, excited.
Yeah, you should be. It's worth a watch. Absolutely worth a watch. I just knew I was never going to watch it again, so I gave it to you.
I feel very grateful for that.
So, yes, we get some weirdo jazz while our pal, Sharf. I wrote in my notes, Aldo Ray, he just plays the Sharf. S-H-A-R-F-F. Sharf.
Yeah. Sharf.
And there was complete chaos at this house. This crime scene where they found the body. All the onlookers show up. Presumably some small town press people are there. Cops are there. Medical examiner. And everyone's just like literally like grilling the Sharf. Like, where are you going to get this guy, Sharf?
Sharf.
And of course the body, much like... Torso where the body bears evidence of carnal violence. And the sheriff, you know, excuse me, the sharf, he's a little bummed out. He's a little stressed from this crime. So he sits in his frickin' cruiser, which I love how well they mic'd the seat springs, just like moaning when Aldo Ray sits down. I was like, okay, that's too good a sound.
Yeah, it is.
But he reaches into the glove box and pulls out a bottle of Old Scooch.
Old Scooch.
So, folks, Doom shows precedent. I want to set this. I think this came up a while ago. Whenever someone's drinking out of a bag and it's booze, you obscure the label. I'm calling it Old Scooch.
I love it.
Now, if it's in a sandwich, like in Nightmare Weekend, where the bottle is literally hidden in a sandwich, that's the special sandwich.
It's pretty good.
The sandwich tastes as dry as hell. So the next day, we cut to Old McDonald's farm, where we see a woman. She takes this goat, or I wrote in my notes, a ghost. And I started to write goat over it, but I left ghost in there. So she takes a ghost, and she sticks it in this little contraption where it gets its food in a bowl, and it holds its head in place. And she begins milking its, and I think the proper name for the things underneath an animal are the squirty sticks.
The squirty sticks.
Yeah.
I think that's correct.
I almost said that without laughing, but I laughed at my own notes.
Almost.
While she's pulling on the squirty sticks, she reminisces about making the sex act and is rubbing her head on the goat like in some kind of horny rapture. But this is this is Mae Britt, and she is an actress who did not work enough for my money. She had some she had a little speed bump in her career called Sammy Davis Jr.
Yeah.
And she's a Swedish actress, and they almost make sense with her Swedishness in this movie, kind of.
Sora.
But yes, she married good old Sammy Davis Jr. in 1960 and then sort of retired from acting until their divorce in 1968. Mm-hmm. And then she came back with a vengeance and then immediately retired like 10 years later. Like, I'm out. Bye.
Yeah.
But yes, this is her only horror film, I think. She did some thrillers. She was typecast as a femme fatale in some stuff. Which I know is, that's rough, dude.
It's gotta be.
I am the same way. I'm the same way. She's my sister of femme fatalness.
I mean, I always say, if you need fatal in femme, Richard will handle it.
Richard Femme Schmidt? Come on.
Boom.
So she hears some suspicious sounds which take her out of her reverie, and she runs, and she sees Uncle Carl. She's calling out to someone we barely see named Uncle Carl. Now, folks, let's go ahead and talk about this character right here. We're talking about our sweaty boy, Mr. Cameron Mitchell himself.
Cam Mitchell.
LOLLIPOP spells lollipop.
Indeed it do.
Cameron Mitchell, one of the most wonderful guys to ever like walk the earth in terms of bad movies. And some great movies. And some great movies too. But you know, this is right at the start of his 80s shit, where he would do anything for money. Mm-hmm. He's great. 244 credits, and of course he was even in that lost, quote-unquote, Orson Welles film, The Other Side of the Wind. So he managed to make an appearance from the grave in 2018, which is incredible.
So awesome.
Love him. He's playing Uncle Carl. We'll get back to him. In this movie, they filmed it in California, but it looks really cold, so he's not sweating much.
Right.
So shit, it might not be him.
Could not be.
I wrote into my notes that I love Ingrid's hipster wardrobe. She's got this dress on that's kind of shortish, and she's got big heavy socks on, and then big old boots that are like serious boots, so she doesn't get goat poop on them, or goat poop on her socks. And then she's got like a little jacket zipped up and a freaking woolly on her head, so she just looks like a freaking like some rando hipster from Portland or Seattle.
Right.
So cute, so fashion forward for 1976.
Seriously.
I had to ask, like, what's her favorite IPA? Does she use a French press or a percolator? Or does she just straight up have her own espresso machine? I don't know.
Yeah, does she hate everyone's new music? Liked it better when they were
unpopular
first out? Yeah.
Oh, brother. Next we see Frankie, the rockabilly beer boy, driving and swerving his truck all over the road. This is someone named William Gray Espy, which is a cool name. But
yeah.
Yeah, just one of those actors that did some TV, did some movies, and then disappeared.
Just disappeared.
But he's got a sweet drinking problem, I guess.
Yeah.
But he gets to his job at the old the Five and Dime grocery store, whatever's, where he's the butcher. And we meet Nell. Nell is the gossip lady, and she is talking some smack about this murder. She talks about how this, the body parts were found all over the place, which probably isn't true. The one thing that she accurately reports on are the scissors. There were scissors used at this crime scene. But Ingrid is tolerating this because she's in line for the butcher, and she shuts her down, dude. She's like,
yeah, she does.
She literally is like, no one's asking you, Nell. Like, if you ask me, no one cares.
Yeah, shut your whore mouth.
So while Frankie's working his magic behind the counter, Ingrid is, she's watching him handle his meat. And of course, this brings all these weird flashes of images of something that's from her past. And if you read the back of that VHS tape, you already know what it is.
You're going to find out.
Oh, boy. But then she gets her meat and she goes driving home, and she's just driving around thinking about Cleavers and something bad from the past. We see the broken glass and blood on the floor. Oh, my God. So she gets home and someone's creeping in the house. It's the Scharf.
It's the Scharf.
And she said,
and it's very oddly set up.
It is. This movie has a strange way of blocking stuff, or just, I guess, strangely edited. I don't know, man. Because this thing runs 96 minutes.
It truly does.
And you wonder, was this like an over 2 hour jam? And the producer said, no.
Crazy talk.
Yeah, cut that shit down. So she asks him if he wants to come in for coffee, and he says, got anything else? And by else, he literally meant ganja. He wanted to smoke some Mary Jane blunts.
Yes.
He asks her if she's seen any suspicious characters around, and basically tells her no matter how small it is, like no matter how like random you think this occurrence is, please report it to me. This turned out to be more important than I realized. Like, she's like, nothing's going to happen. He's like, but dude, seriously, anything at all. And for so real. She's going to deliver. But then Frankie brings the groceries after he leaves. Why did I write Frankie brings them? I wrote too many notes, by the way. I wrote something stupid.
I think you meant Frankie goes to Hollywood.
Thank you. Now I have to keep that in. Okay. But he tells her about the scissors. So she confirms the scissors thing. He confirms the scissors thing. And then after he leaves, she goes searching through her sewing kit, and her scissors are gone. And we cut to choir practice. And
choir practice.
This choir practice is so funny. Because they're all singing a traditional hymn or whatever. Lady at the keyboard makes everyone pause for a long time while she does a gosh darn Inagata Davida keyboard solo.
Wow.
And then points at them like when they're supposed to come back in. And I'm like, no. You keep soloing, lady. I want to rest. What is...
Yeah, what's weird is that this is a traditional song. I've heard it many times at church.
It's a real hymn.
It's farther along, but IMDb says the one song in the film credited as Father I Long, like I Long for You.
Right.
You know, Seinfeld, was copyrighted by Art Podell and Herb Fried. It's actually a rearrangement of the old hymn, Farther Along, which had many disputed authors. It's the public domain. But they took this the song that's in the public domain and turned it into Father, I Long, which I find to be very interesting. And it's something that if I had not read it, I watched this movie twice.
You did. Episode, you absolutely did.
And I would not have known that the song was titled something differently than the traditional hymn. I mean, it kind of leads into what we're going to find out about. But I think this movie has a lot of hidden depths.
I wonder if they change the lyrics too, but because it's in that choral style.
Mm-hmm. It's hard to tell.
Yeah. Interesting. Interesting. Her pal, this guy, he tries to set her up with the new guy in town. This is Bill Spry. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she's not having it. Like, she shuts his ass down. Like,
boy,
like big time. Now, this Bill Spry character, this is played by someone named Robert Hippard, who did very little acting, but he worked on Masters of the Universe as a visual effects production supervisor. And
that's amazing.
And he worked on The Monster Squad as a production supervisor. And he worked on Brainstorm, the crazy freaking Christopher Walken movie.
Yeah, I've never seen that.
I have seen parts of it. I always thought it was based on a novel by Michael Crichton, but it is not. I think Michael Crichton probably could have sued. I feel like Brainstorm is like a Michael Crichton ripoff movie, but I don't know. I haven't seen it to confirm. Just my gut instinct there. So she shuts his ass down, and then she's being walked home by her pal, Margaret. I like this character a lot. Margaret is the one doing the crazy solo. We'll find out later that she can't sing, which is really funny.
It is funny.
So she's good at leading, bad at everything else. And while they're walking home and having this great conversation, like really funny, where Ingrid literally like, yeah, too bad you can't sing as well as you play piano.
That's so true.
And then Frankie pulls up in his hot red pickup truck and asks the girls if he wants a lift, if he wants a lift, if they want a lift. and Margaret's like, I'm getting in. Yes, yes, I'm getting in. Holy shit, yes. And Ingrid's like, nah, dog, I hate this guy. And she starts walking. So Margaret catches up and is like, dude, what's up? And she's like, I don't like the way he's always watching me with his beady eyes.
Ugh.
His beady eyes.
Beady eyes.
And so, this is important though, folks. Keep in mind, Frankie has been undressing her with his beady eyes. Very important.
Mm-hmm. That's what you think. Oh, come on, Ingrid. Don't you ever have any fun? Oh, he's disgusting. The way he looks at me through those beady eyes, he makes me feel dirty all over. I don't trust him.
So Margaret's like, aren't you worried about living alone with this killer? And Ingrid's like, I don't live alone. She's like, really? Yeah, I live with my Uncle Carl. And she's like, your Uncle Carl? Never heard of him. What is he, the boogeyman or something?
Mm-hmm.
So she's finally alone, and she's walking up her freaking drive, and Pino be going cray-cray. Pino's running up and down that keyboard, and then the creeper strikes.
Boom.
So she runs, and he catches her, but he beats her before he can rape her and murder her. She beats him about the brain with a rock. This is completely crazy. She gets home and runs into Uncle Carl, and he is, you know, our boy, Cameron Mitchell.
Yeah.
But he does not give two shits about her freaking story of being attacked. He's like, nah, you definitely imagined it. Nah, I'm going out. Bye. Yeah.
See ya.
So she calls the sheriff, and he is literally puking. He's puking in the toilet, and is it his wife? I think it's his wife in the room with him. He's like, "Honey, honey, do you want to? They want to talk to you." It's an emergency. He's like, ugh, ugh. He's wiping his mouth off in the sink, and just he's a total mess.
Just awful.
What is going on?
It's crazy.
All I can think of is he's hitting the old scooch a little too hard.
He's hitting the old scooch, all right.
Or he just has a horrible stomach virus, and they're going to have to burn everything he touched.
Something is bad, wrong.
So she tells him, like, dude, I just got attacked. Oh, I wrote in my notes, the sheriff looks like a pack of old hot dogs.
A pack of old hot
dogs. But in
dogs.
A bad way.
So see. That's something like...
Oh, jeez.
Bleeding Skull had the fat 80s sheriff.
Oh, yes. Yes.
You need the bad pack of hot dog sheriff.
He tells her just to lock up because he's in no condition to... But he can't just call a deputy to go over there and whatever. So she's alone, locked in the house with her bad memories. And we it looks as though when she's a little girl, someone fondled her. Like, not, it's not explicit, but it's, you know, she's got the short little kid dress on. The hand is very, the camera's focusing on the hand, like lifting this little girl up, and it looks very suspicious. And then we see a flash of someone dead in a bathtub. But let's get back to the main character, who's actually Nell, the greatest living character in any movie. Nell, yes. our town gossip, is just grooving to the jukebox at this bar, the only bar in town. The song stops. She looks around and goes, "Hey, any of you creeps got a quarter?"
Yeah.
She starts flirting with this spry guy, which I think is a funny thing. And they're having this banter. He acts sort of interested in her, but then as soon as she tries to get him to dance, he's like, "Nope, bitch."
Nope.
And she informs him that dancing is easy. All you have to do is wiggle a little bit, which is also true of sex.
You're right.
Yes, thank you.
You're welcome.
He tells her that she drinks too much, and hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo, she's not pleased. Man, oh man, she's pissed. And she tells him off as he leaves. Meanwhile, Loretta, who is the daughter of the sheriff, she's waiting outside in the dark. And then good old Frankie pulls up. And yes, that is her man, Frankie. And they argue. Mm-hmm. And she notices that he's been injured. But he says, "I hurt myself at work."
Yeah.
It's like, that killer was injured earlier. Very curious.
Very curious.
They break up because they have a vicious disagreement about who really wrote Shakespeare's plays.
Right. One of them thought it was Bacon. The other one didn't. Yep.
I was thinking it was Ben Jonson, but...
Ben Jonson.
The actor.
The actor Ben Jonson.
He did
very,
it.
Very, very talented fella.
Older than you think he was.
Well, quite a bit.
So they break up, boo-hoo, and then we go back to Nell, just closing out the bar. She is closing that there bar, y'all. And because she has this funny rapport with the bartender, and they are goofing.
Sure.
They're goofing. And sadly, this is her only film credit. This is someone named Susan Knorr, and I want to see more of her, because when she leaves the diner, you see them legs, and it's like, I want to see more of this actress.
Heck yeah.
She jumps in her freaking, I always call them Jordache cars.
Right.
But they're Mustangs, but they got the logo that looks like the Jordache jeans, so I call them Jordaches.
Yeah, whenever somebody gets Jordache, I thought Jordache was bringing them food. Like, Jordache doesn't even, they're just the horse emblem. They don't bring you food.
I would love a Jordache pizza right now.
Oh my gosh.
It's horse meat. So there's a killer in her back seat, and I gotta ask the killer a question. Do you want to not wait until she's parked the car before you try to kill her? Because she's driving the car when he starts strangling her.
It's like he's a new killer and he's not really worked out all the wrinkles.
Exactly. Ingrid goes out to her barn and she finds a mess. All the grain and the potatoes are all over the floor. Mm-hmm. And she picks up some grain to go feed the chickens, but those chickens are restless.
Restless chickens.
And she finds Nell's body covered in chickens. And man, I love May Britt in this moment. Mm-hmm. She completely panics and is freaking out.
Freaks out.
But she has this moment where she feels bad for her friend, and she tries to get the chickens off of her. And then when she clears the chickens off her, she has a breakdown again and goes back to sobbing. It's so sad.
Yeah, she's very, very sad in this.
Oh, yeah. This is If you can't empathize with this character, then you're an asshole.
Wow. Even if it's just a little bit, I mean, this lady's gonna have some problems.
Yeah.
So she gets the sheriff out there, and so the sheriff is out there, and he is worried about her. Like, he is, he just thinks things ain't right. So he's talking with the doctor, who's his character's name is Doc, and he is played by another one of these characters. This is EJ Andre, or Andre EJ, however you want to call him. 97 credits, including the Magic, the creepy Anthony Hopkins ventriloquist movie I've never seen for some reason.
Magic?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen that.
I have this like memory of seeing it as a kid, but I think I've just seen the box. I really needed to watch that to see if I've actually seen it. But no, this guy, the doctor's like, eh, she's fine. She seems great to me.
Yeah.
She's just sure. She's just doing some crocheting. Totally cool. But the
no problem.
The sheriff is not having. He's like, he is worried. And then I realize what he was sick with, Brad, why he got sick.
Tell us.
Dirty bowling balls.
Man.
You stick your fingers in the bowling balls and you play bowling, and then you stick your fingers in the nachos and you eat the nachos, and then you get puking in the frickin' sink.
Yep, I mean, you've got a clear delineation there, I think.
Yeah. As soon as Ingrid is alone, she runs out into the woods and starts ripping up vegetation and singing to herself. And we get more memories of her being taken away to a boarding school, which is one of the funniest things at the end of this movie that cracks me up. And we see this iron gate slamming. This iron gate slamming is this motif of her memories. So she goes to the shoreline, which is this rocky, craggy-looking, terrifying shoreline. I would never go near it. And someone's following her. And it's Uncle Carl.
Oh, boy. My friend Carl always complains that if there is a Carl in a movie, he's a creepy weirdo.
Well, not in The Simpsons.
Not in The Simpsons. Good. This is true.
Good God, man. What are you doing? That's Carl. You're welcome. So... thank you. She locks him out. She straight up just locks her uncle out. And we don't know what the story is. He just locks her out. Locks him out. Right. Sorry. Then she sees that one of her socks has blood on it. So she freaking rips off this sock and burns it. Like, burns this evidence. And you're like, whoa, what's going on here? And she starts milking that goat again. And this time she sees milk spraying out of the goat's squeezy stick.
Squeezy stick.
And then the whole bucket of blood spills on her. Like, she's full on hallucinating. There was no blood. She runs back to the house. She jumps in the shower, and a black gloved killer is creeping. And we get this amazing music. Oh my God, Pino.
I'm telling you.
Man. And we see that she's washing herself raw. Like, she has scrapes on her skin. She's washing herself. And that's when Frankie bursts in. Now, Frankie is there with his crazy shirt. He has this weird, like, red, like, silk shirt with black pockets, which is very disturbing. And he proceeds to hold her down the bed and start to rape her, and then there's a knock at the door. He's threatening her. He's got her at knife point. And Uncle Carl's on the other side of the door. And he tells her to be quiet and act normal. So they talk through the door, and that's it. We cut to her confessing, or trying to confess, to the local priest. But she doesn't tell him anything.
No, not really.
He's listed as the vicar. So it's obviously the vicar of Dibley.
Dibley.
Yep. This is yet another character actor. Oh my God. This is Ben Hammer.
Ben Hammer.
Oh my Lord. He was acting all the way up until 2017.
Wow.
Holy shit. He was in Mannequin. Oh, my Lord. Speaking of movies from my childhood. He was in The Beastmaster.
You know, I've never seen The Beastmaster. I bought the really, 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 really nice Beastmaster from Vinegar Syndrome.
And you haven't?
And I still have not watched it. Wow. And even though the joke was, what does HBO stand for? Hey, Beastmaster's on.
So true.
I have never seen it. I still not seen it, but it is like, dude, it is the nicest set anyone has ever made.
I don't think you'll be disappointed. It's quite special.
I'm excited.
Yeah. He was in Invasion of the B-Girls. Bunch of stuff. Yeah, his career goes all the way back to the late 40s, for God's sake.
Wow.
It's incredible. So she's trying to confess to him, but she's way too scared. So they just pray together.
Yeah.
And then she sees there's spilled wine on the altar, and it's very disturbing. It's like, ooh, what does that mean? Then she sees Frankie talking to the priest about something suspicious. It looks like he's confessing something, but we can't tell what it is. She leaves. She's cutting through the cemetery at night, which is always a great idea. Did you see the name on the gravestone that she passes?
I did. It was, go ahead and it was, you tell.
It was Britt.
Yes.
It was May Britt walking by her own casket. Funeral parlor trick.
Very nice.
She gets attacked by the frickin' killer again.
Again.
Yep. And she is just destroyed at this point. Like, she's completely broken, like just gibbering, insane. And that's when we find out that the priest, you know, she's in the hospital. She's so freaking freaked out. But in the hospital, before the Sharf can talk to her, the priest drops a little gem on him that his daughter Loretta is carrying Frankie's little grocery bag.
Yeah, and how the doctor knows.
Yeah.
Like, we ran a blood test.
Yeah. Yeah, whatever. So it makes no sense. So that night, yet another woman is attacked. But there was cops writing a speeding ticket to a guy. And so they intervene. The cops run after this killer. Meanwhile, the guy who's getting a ticket takes the ticket off of the hood of his car and flings it away and then drives off. So cool.
Amazing.
Love it. But they chase the killer to some kind of a factory or something?
Like a sawmill?
Yeah, I don't know what's going on, but they take him and they freaking shoot him. Yeah. They're shooting at him. Yeah. Crazy.
I like your apron.
Well, who baked that wonderful hot loaf? We'd really like to know.
I did it.
You were wonderful.
It's Pillsbury Poppin' Fresh Dough.
This hot loaf dough is a snack. Pop in the oven, watch it bake up.
Well, I never...
Yes, he baked that wonderful hot loaf. It's poppin' fresh dough.
Can I have some more?
It's Pillsbury Poppin' Fresh Dough.
Hot loaf is a snap.
So, we have a very fun scene where the Sharf confronts Loretta and Frankie. He is livid. He is completely livid because, aside from the fact that she's knocked up, he knows with all of his heart that Frankie is the killer, because according to Ingrid, Frankie attacked her.
Yeah.
I hear a special guest.
You do. Elizabeth is running towards her right now, I'm sure. So mortified.
Oh, it's fine. It's just like Simon's little buddy.
Esther?
Yeah, dude.
Yeah.
She's made many cameos on the show. So,
I'm sure.
So the cops call and they're like, dude, so we just caught the killer in mid-rape murder. And we shot him dead. We killed him.
D-E-D.
Yeah. And then they unmask the killer, and it's that spry guy. It was the new guy in town, surprising literally no one that it was him. But, you know, this puts our Frankie off him. They let him go.
Yeah. Pretty fly for a spry guy.
Ingrid is watching the news, and they're already reporting about this shit happening. Now the killer got killed.
Yep.
And so she's like, I got to go see the sheriff about this, because they, you know, there's no way it's not Frankie. So she goes.
Exactly.
Loretta answers the door and is like, I don't know where my dad is. I hate you, by the way, for spreading those lies about Frankie. And Ingrid almost smacks her for calling her a liar.
Uh-huh.
But she resists. Oh, sorry, sorry. And that's when she just blasts her for being a liar. And so Ingrid plays detective, and she goes home, and she's got proof. She's got proof. She's got some kind of evidence. Maybe she didn't burn that sock after all. Maybe she's got something covered in blood. Awesome. I don't remember exactly what her proof was. She's very excited about it. And then, holy shit, Frankie walks in his silky shirt, holding the knife.
Yep.
Or no, holding scissors. He's got the scissors. Snip, snip.
Yeah.
And he starts cutting her buttons off. And we see that he's got a good old Uncle Carl tied to a chair and his mouth taped shut, which I don't know how you could keep tape on Cameron Mitchell. It's just going to slide right off that sweaty boy.
Slide off of him. Sweaty Cameron Mitchell.
Oh, boy. So she manages to trick good old Frankie into, like, not paying attention while she's obviously grabbing the fire poker. And she hits him with the fire poker and starts untying Uncle Carl, but then Frankie gets up and chases her in the other room. Finally, Uncle Carl unties himself, and he's hearing a scuffle in the other room, and he's struggling. And that's when Frankie walks in with a knife stabbed in his back.
Mm-hmm.
And she goes to call the cops. But Uncle Carl, ever the advice giver, is like, leave everything to Uncle Carl. So while she's taking a shower, he's down in the yard burying the body. And he comes in, and he's a bad man. Carl's bad. He tries to molest her. He tries to get her in the shower, and it's like, she's like, I can't deal with this. So she bursts out of the house, runs to the cops to tell them everything. And now the cops are hip to some shit here, because they ask her very pointedly, so you mentioned being scared of Carl, your Uncle Carl. Why are you scared? And she laughs it off and says, he scares me with all those crazy things he does. But she insists that he loves me. So the cops the next morning go to the house to search for Carl and this body that they buried. And it's like, do the cops believe her? Because when they're not looking, she flashes the creepiest smile, Brad. Oh, my God.
Very.
When she thinks no one's looking, this smile goes across her face. And I'm like, oh, this actress is so good. Like, I'm sure people interpret her as bad because of her wildly thick accent.
Yeah.
But, dude, I'm liking Mae Britt in this. So they're searching the property. That's when Doc shows up at the house with Loretta and Frankie, the very alive Frankie. What?
Oh, yeah.
And here's our twist, people. Who do they find buried in the yard? The saddest, the other saddest thing about this movie.
The goat.
Her freaking goat, dude. It's so sad. She murdered her own goat. Like, that goat must have been so confused.
Really?
What are you doing? I love you. So, while they're admiring this freaking goat buried in the yard, the sheriff realizes that he sees steam coming from the window of the upstairs bath, and he just bolts. He just runs. Sure enough, Ingrid is in the bath with her wrist slit, just like someone else in her bath. Dun, dun, dun. And now we get the truth that, you know, did Frankie ever attack her? Did Frankie ever rape her? What has been going on? You know, where is Uncle Carl? What the hell? And then Uncle Carl shows up after Ingrid is dead because she's, you know, killed herself in the bath.
Yeah, he steps out of the car, and he has very white hair, silver hair.
He's an old man.
Right.
And then we have not one, but two amazing exposition dumps back-to-back here.
Huge.
This is why this movie is 96 minutes long. The subtlety will go out the window.
Gone.
Carl's like, what's going on? What's happening? And then, you know, the sheriff breaks it down for him, like, your niece was disturbed, and I think this and this and this, and he just lays out what we've been talking about. And then Uncle Carl breaks it down. He talks about what happened in the past. But before we talk about that, Brad,
missed opportunity here. Aldo Ray, Cameron Mitchell playing buddy detectives.
Yes.
Trying absolutely. To out-sweat each other.
Mm-hmm.
So let's
we win.
Yes. Let's do a common cast and crew comparison to see what they were in together. So a little collaborations action here. We're going to take Aldo mm-hmm. Ray. And we're going to take Cameron Mitchell. They were in 5 things together.
Wow.
They were in something called Hollywood Cop.
Hollywood Cop.
Ooh, did they play cops in that?
Hollywood Cop.
James Mitchum stars with freaking Cameron Mitchell. Aldo Ray plays Mr. Fong. Oh my God. Does that mean he plays an Asian man?
Probably.
They were in something called Swift Justice together.
Heck yeah.
They were in Haunts together, obvious. But they were also in a horror movie that I always forget I have seen called Terror Night, a.k.a. Bloody Movie. Wow. So Cameron Mitchell's a detective in that one. And Aldo Ray probably plays another Asian man. I'm not sure.
Probably.
You know, he plays Captain Ned. So maybe they play cops in that movie. I got to rewatch Bloody Movie, dude.
Heck yeah.
That's so freaking funny. So anyway, we find out just how fudged up the old family is here. We find out that Uncle Carl's not an uncle at all. He's a daddy. He had an affair with, this is what I got. If I'm wrong, whatever. He had an affair with Ingrid's mom, and that's who her father is. And then when Ingrid was a child, she walked in on Uncle Carl and her mom.
Mm-hmm.
And then dad showed up and then killed himself, or mom killed herself, or they killed her real dad. I don't know what the hell happened.
Well, I don't think it makes it very clear.
Right.
I got the feeling that he was her uncle and her dad killed him. I'm not sure.
I think they talk about...
I know her mom killed herself.
Right. So we know that happened.
Well, you know what? We've got this...
Shit. The VHS tape.
The back of this thing say, yeah.
I should have just done the tape. Why didn't I just read the tape to you?
Yeah. He hasn't seen Ingrid for some 20 years. We learned that Ingrid died a virgin. She was never raped. She was indeed attacked by the psychopathic killer and escaped. That unleashed memories of her uncle sleeping with her mother and of her mother's suicide, which she witnessed. Unable to deal with these memories, they drove her to imagine that Uncle Carl was again with her and that Frankie attacked her repeatedly.
Wow. Okay, so...
But the whole ending is very drawn out. Like, they drive in a big circle.
Yep.
Like, they get into the cop car and just drive in a big circle while they talk.
Yes. And the callback he does is, because one of the things that she says that Uncle Carl always says is the Lord giveth and the Lord taketh away prayer. And then, of course, Uncle Carl, after what this tragedy, he also spouts the same thing. It's very sad.
Right. Uncle Carl goes back to the house
yeah.
and he goes in and he goes and he stands in front of the fireplace and then he goes upstairs. He goes into the bathroom.
Yes.
And he's looking in the bathroom mirror. Well, he turns the water on, and the water turns to blood.
Yes.
And he looks in the bathroom vanity mirror, and it steams up, and there is Ingrid behind him.
Ah, but is it Ingrid because her face is obscured? It could
who
be.
Who knows?
Could be the ghost of her mother.
It could be.
Yeah, I love how the madness in their family, like, blood comes out of places it shouldn't. So Ingrid mm-hmm. had the bloody goat, and then he's got the bloody faucet. It's like, ooh.
Yeah.
Man, that freeze frame, boy. And the look on his face is one of elation. Oh my God.
Yeah, it's so good that I watched it two nights in a row because after I'd seen it before, but I couldn't remember.
Yeah.
And so after watching that end, I said, we're going to watch this again tomorrow. And we watched it again because it's hard to see because it's not the best picture. And
yeah,
go ahead and you could tell how the picture looks.
Yeah, it's muddy, but it's mm-hmm. not unwatchably bad. Sometimes you get the feeling that something's really, really obscure for a reason. It's hard to find. Uh-huh. I'm hoping Vinegar Syndrome could resurrect this bad boy, because I'm just wondering what the actual color palette of the movie is other than yellow.
Yes.
There's no trivia about this that I can find other than, you know, some of the cast and crew we talked about. The cinematography is by a guy named Larry Sechrist. Who shot the only other movie he shot was Warlock Moon.
I've seen that.
Yes, I too have seen that. I want to say there's a Joe Bob commentary for that.
There is, yeah. I saw that, and it's not the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, but it's the same year, and it's got some similar themes. And ooh. I know that I've talked to you before about what if, you know, alternate realities. What if Warlock Moon is the movie from that year that's got some of the same themes that everyone attaches themselves to?
Yeah.
Just an interesting thought.
I love it. But yeah, so Brad, unless you have some other gems to drop about this thing.
I do.
Oh, tell me more.
I Googled Haunts. And I found a website called bandsaboutmovies.com.
Okay.
And it says, this entry was written by Bill Van Run, who is behind the amazing Groovy Doom and Drive-In Asylum. And I thought,
yes.
I follow a page called Groovy Doom on Facebook, and they share a lot of theater ads, newspaper ads for horror films and the like.
Mm-hmm,
and so
sure
I read it. He says, Haunts is one of those low-budget films with multiple layers of implications. On the surface, it's a horror movie about a mass killer stalking a small town for victims with a female lead who acts as the film's damsel in distress. Another dimension unfolds, though, when we realize that the movie is really about the breakdown of the woman's psyche, seemingly inspired by Roman Polanski's Repulsion.
Ooh.
Something that he says later. The low-budget, regional aspect of the production, however, reminds me more of S.F. Brownrigg's Keep My Grave Open.
What? Dude.
Which is very close to Haunts in terms of its tone.
Good call, sir.
So I thought, you know what? I'm going to message this guy on Facebook. So it's just called Groovy Doom. So I messaged him and said, good evening. Are you the same Groovy Doom as the blog? And I'll link the blog. And he said, hi. Yes, that's me. I said, brilliant. I co-host a podcast and we're recording on Haunts, and I ran across your review. In it, you mentioned S.F. Brownrigg, and we did a super show on S.F. Brownrigg.
Yeah.
Surely we're the only podcast to cover all of his horror thriller films. Anyway, I saw that it said the gentleman behind Groovy Doom wrote it, and I thought it's bound to be the guy that I follow on Facebook. Your review is great. I'd like to quote from it on the show, giving you full credit, and plug your blog and Facebook page if you don't mind. And he said, sure, feel free. Brownrigg is my jam.
Yes.
Where can I listen to your podcast? So I linked him, and he said he actually went and he had a friend that slept overnight in the building that was used for the sanitarium in Don't Look in the Basement.
Whoa.
I said, let's see. He said, I'll definitely check out the Brownrigg episode and the rest of your podcast. We'll plug you on our webcast this week.
Yay.
And so he sent me, they do a watch along, or I think they talk about the movie before and then they talk about the movie after.
Nice.
Where you could watch it on Facebook, and they just did The Demon. Cameron Mitchell, another episode, a movie that we had covered.
Nice.
And that I watched it a couple of weeks ago, and I said, this conversation has a strong Cameron Mitchell flavor, and he said, if Cameron Mitchell's in it, it's got to be good, right?
I love it.
So he does the drive-in asylum. He says, we don't actually show the movies. We just talk about them before and after. He told me about a movie-thon at a drive-in that DVD drive-in always promotes. And he said, yes. And so we talked about it. He said, Bowling Green, they have a lovely orchestra, according to John Carpenter. So we talked about Halloween and nice. This and that, this and that. And he said, we did Keep My Grave Open just a few weeks ago on our show. Oh, I love that yes. one so much.
I commented on their posts. I commented on their post about how much I love that movie. I remember.
Yeah, so I told you, I'm like, you know, I've made a connection with a guy. And it's a guy you know. And in fact, later I saw one of the posts where you had liked it or commented on it.
Nice.
But I thought, man, how crazy is that? I've been following him. I didn't know his name. But I enjoy his work, and apparently he does a lot of other things in the realm of webcasting, podcasting, and I told him that I would make sure we plugged him on the show. Absolutely. And it seemed like we're kindred spirits, where he's covered stuff that we enjoy and vice versa. But yeah, no, Haunts, it's got a lot of, I think it's got a lot of depth to it that yeah. you don't really know to look even look for the first time.
Exactly, exactly. It bears repeat viewings.
It does. I want to ask you what you think about it, and then I've got something sort of in lieu of a question time.
Sure, sure. So check out Groovy Doom, and check out Drive-In Asylum. There's Zine. I actually have issues of their Zine.
Really?
And it's really fun. It looks like bandsaboutmovies.com. But it is actually bandsaboutmovies.com.
Oh, that makes sense.
But I read it as bands about movies all the time.
Yeah, I did actually.
I really enjoy this one. It's right on the edge of being one I love. I don't know if I love mm-hmm. this one. I was taken by it the first time watch. I remember talking to you like right after mm-hmm. I'd seen it. And it kind of went on our sort of on our list, maybe as like a it was just on our list. So rewatching it though, this time I found, you know, that 5 minutes at the end is kind of a struggle. Obviously Cameron Mitchell and Aldo Ray are incredible, but it's that 11th hour exposition dumps that there's two of them. It's a bit sloppy, but not terrible. Like I theorized. I said earlier that I feel like this was a 2-hour epic that they managed to cut down.
Sure.
The thing about this movie that is complicated, this story would never be made now.
No.
This trauma, this sexual abuse, all uh-huh. in this woman's head would not play well today at all because of Me Too. And like women fighting to be believed, and mm-hmm. Lieto strongly disliked that part about this right. movie, and she thought that it was just brutalizing this character. And I agree with her to a point. And my thing is though, you care about this character.
You really do.
You're like invested, and you're just watching this stuff. And when you find out that she's been imagining all this stuff, it's like, oh shit. Like that's terrible. Like it's even worse than, I mean, it's not worse than real physical abuse, but like, and then I realized that the only person that she hurts other than herself is her goat. Like I remembered falsely that she went on like a little killing spree.
Uh-huh.
Like, no, she's just this sad character and everything. And so like, I think it's dangerous to, you know, this was a different time obviously, but I think it's sure. dangerous to make, maybe too many films where the woman's crazy. No one's out to get her and defile her, blah, blah, blah. It's like, yeah, but all that criticism aside, the subtleties in this are surprising. Like you were saying, you don't expect this to have nuanced and little weird things to it. I'd be very curious to find out if they changed the lyrics of that hymn.
Yeah.
Which they retitled.
Well, I think I think that there are, she's so sympathetic, and the fact that it ends on the note of him seeing somebody in the mirror, yeah. And plus, the first time we watched it this time, when Uncle Carl gets out of the car for the funeral, or after the funeral, his hair is silver, and I said, wait a minute. So that's what really, it was a very subtle yeah. way, without just specifically saying, you don't look like you did when, you know, you were running around.
Oh, yeah.
Earlier. I thought that was pretty clever yeah. to shorthand it.
And that reminds me, too, like, so, yeah, if she was the one that he was happy to see in the shower, like, yeah, that's messed up. He probably, that implication that maybe he's been touching her, or he's had lustful thoughts for her, and he stayed away from her. He never visited her.
Never, ever.
Was he staying away from her because of these inappropriate feelings yeah. he had for her? And of course, the one thing I really wanted to talk about, I'm so glad I remember this, the excuse of why her accent is so thick. Did you catch this?
She went to an Eastern European orphanage.
But he literally said that it's like upstate.
Yeah.
And I'm like, how can you have an Eastern European freaking orphanage or whatever, or boarding school upstate?
Yeah. Well, and he's like, I haven't seen her in 20 years.
Right.
And so obviously the implication is that she could have lived with him and not gone to an orphanage.
Right.
But he did not choose that.
And somehow the family farm was just waiting for her? I don't know.
I have a feeling, like you said, that this was a longer film that was edited up.
Yeah.
And also, you know, Herb Fried went to do more complex films, Graduation Day and Beyond Evil. So maybe this is still early on.
Maybe.
But really, that again, that last note of what he sees in the
chilling,
in the, that just, it really is, and it kind of, it makes you forgive a lot of the shortcomings that you perceive throughout the film, because I don't know, it just leaves you with such a chilling, you know, visual.
Yeah. Man, we did it. We haunted.
Yeah, we did. So what I wanted to do was, I've got three of these Mill Creek sets.
Yeah.
And they're the three horror ones that I've got. Mm-hmm. I've got a musical one, and I've got a Peplum one. The 50 movie pack chilling classics is what I have haunts on. We actually did not watch it. We watched it on YouTube both times.
Yeah.
But this one has got Bell from Hell, which is a good version worth watching.
Nice.
Nice enough transfer. Kathy's Curse, which I saw.
Yeah, yeah.
It has got Death Rage, which I've not seen, but I know is hacked to death.
Yes, I've been hoping that somebody would put out, I bet it's easier to find now, a uncut version of Death Rage.
Mm-hmm. This has the demon on it, which is the first time that I saw the demon.
Yeah.
It has got an uncut Deep Red, full length, 126 what? Minutes. Yes.
Is it in widescreen, or is it like full frame? Or?
Yes. It's the...
They just ripped
you
it.
You know, it's not the... Yeah, the whole size of your TV.
That's,
so it's not...
That's incredible.
Letterboxed. Isn't that crazy? The Demons of Ludlow?
Now that is a weird freaking yes. movie, dude. What the hell?
Yes. Devil Times 5.
Yes.
Hero Home.
Oh, yeah.
The Ghost.
Woo!
Gothic. Horror Express. Lady Frankenstein,
oh my
which is the first God. Place I saw it.
Yes.
Messiah of Evil.
Oh, my God. I had this pack. I had this exact pack, dude.
Yeah, you did. Murder Mansion, first time I saw it. Silent Night, Bloody Night, which is also the first place I saw Woo! That film. Sisters of Death, which is, it's a very boring film, but I like it.
I remember that one.
Werewolf in a Girl's Dormitory, which I still have not seen.
Dude.
But those are just some that are on that.
That Blu-ray is nice.
Absolutely. I've got another one that is Pure Terror, And it has Bloody Pit of Horror.
Wow.
The Devil's Nightmare.
Oh, yeah.
The Devil's Possessed and Dr. Jekyll and the Werewolf, both Nashi films.
Nice.
Grave of the Vampire.
Ooh.
Horror Rises from the Tomb. The House by the Cemetery, the Fulci film. It Happened at Nightmare Inn, which I believe is one of your jams.
I am a jam on it.
You are. So am I. Keep My Grave Open,
ooh,
which
baby.
We've already talked about. Mutant, which I absolutely love, and you and I covered episode 100, I think.
What the thing that no one remembers about that movie, every time people bring up Mutant, I bring up the same thing. When they go to the school, the only kid in the school is there, sitting there alone in a classroom. They talk to him, and he is voiced mm-hmm. by a woman, and they literally sped up the audio to make it sound like a child. It is the
wow.
most unnatural garbage. It sounds like he's talking through a guitar pedal. Folks, watch Mutant, the one with Wings Hauser, and just go mm-hmm. to the scene at the school with the kid. I was here, and I was... Oh. It's horrible.
Ellie, what are you doing here?
I got to school late and nobody was here.
School's canceled today, Billy. You can go home.
I can't, Miss Pierce. Nobody's at home. My mom and dad are gone.
Love it.
Bad stuff.
Love it.
The Vampire's Night Orgy.
Yes.
Well, then, in which I've got a better copy courtesy of you.
Yay.
The last one that I want to go through is called Undead, the Vampire Collection.
Ooh, I don't know this one.
Yes. Adam H. Vampire.
Yes.
Two versions of the Bat. Blood of Dracula's Castle.
Yes.
The Bloody Vampire. The daughter of a vampire hunter goes undercover as a maid in a castle believed to be run by a vampire.
What?
Which is, I believe it's a Mexican film. I've seen it.
Okay. I don't know that one. Wow.
Really? Count Dracula and His Vampire Bride, which is The Satanic Rites of Dracula
yes.
in its public domain.
Yes.
Crypt of the Living Dead, which I own on Blu-ray. Mm-hmm. It is an adaptation of The Tomb of Sarah, which is a great story.
Nice.
Horror Express, which is not about vampires at all. The Last Man on Earth, everybody knows that one. Vincent Price, Richard Matheson. Nightmare Castle, Barbara Steele.
Whew. Yeah.
It's got Nosferatu, but it's got a misspelling, so on mine it's Nosferatu.
What?
Yeah. Terror Creatures from the Grave, which Elizabeth has not stayed awake through yet. The Vampire
wow.
Bat, which
wow.
is, I believe it's the Lionel Atwill. Vampire's Night Orgy, which I just mentioned.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The Werewolf versus Vampire Women, which is a Paul Nashi film, which is Werewolf Shadow.
One of my favorites.
And then The Witch's Mountain, that's got Patty Shepard, that I saw
Dude.
Once many years
that,
ago. This was a great set.
That is a movie that I would kill to see restored in some
yes.
sensible form. Because if I recall correctly, that movie is like 70 minutes or less. And it
really?
Feels chopped to shit. Like they cut out everything. Everything.
I watched it because of Patty Shepard, and I don't remember. It's
yeah.
been so long.
Let me look at my shelves real quick. I'm going to grab a couple. Hold on.
Please do.
Full disclosure here. Because of Vinegar Syndrome are assholes and Severin are total dickheads, I had to get rid of all of my Mill Creek huge packs. My sister, my lovely sister, Cindy, sent me this gigantic Mill Creek mega pack thing. And I held
yes.
on to them for years and years and years. And I had all those old Mill Creek ones, the paper, the cardboard ones that as soon as you open it, they're freaking ripping and falling apart.
Mm-hmm.
And I had those forever, and they were a great resource until these jerks started putting out all these movies in great edition. So I stopped using these sets, and they just were taking up space for a super long time.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't even doing anything with them ever. And so when those bastards at Severin and Vinegar Syndrome were so mean to me and forced me to buy box sets of Gialli and forced me at gunpoint, literal, not figurative gunpoint, to buy that Christopher Lee box set, which now they're putting out a second one. I'm like, nope, don't got room. I got rid of my Mill Creek packs, which is very sad. But, you know, hey, I donated them, hopefully to charity shop somewhere. People are going to be like, whoa, this 12-year-old kid's not going to ask his parents. He's just going to freaking buy, you know, 100 movies for $5 and live a nerdy life, you know?
Yes.
But I've got two of these collections I held on to. One is indeed Mill Creek. The other one is a Rhino one, believe it or not.
Really?
So I've got the Horrible Horrors Collection, Volume 1 by Rhino. It's got Horror High. It's got the hilarious Point of Terror, which is almost a giallo. It's not horror at all. Satan's Slave Boy. Nice. I keep throwing boy at the end of everything. I should stop doing that. Satan's Slave, freaking Norman J. Warren. And then right next to it, Terror, Norman J. Warren.
Oh,
so this is how I got into those movies. Then you got Primeval and Lurkers. So you got your Roberta Findlay jams on here. I think Lurkers is the secret Christmas movie. It's great. Okay. The Hearse, which, as you know, folks, I used to hate The Hearse. The first time watch, I hated it, and now I love it.
The famous saying, yep. I'd rather throw myself down a flight of stairs than see The Hearse again.
And now I have it on Blu-ray, and I'm a big fan of it. It has a movie called, it's got a movie called Flesh Burn on it, which I've still never watched. Still never watched this Flesh Burn. But the other one I have is Gore House Greats. And folks, this is one of my favorite frickin' collections ever. We've got Blood of Dracula's Castle, which is totally insane.
Crazy.
It's got John Carradine in it. Blood Mania, which I still have never watched. And that has a Blu-ray, I think. I've never seen Blood Mania. I want to see it. Something called Brain Twisters, which I've never watched.
Brain Twisters.
The Devil's Hand, which I've never watched. I love this set so much, I've never watched any of it. The Mad Men of Mendoras, a.k.a. They Saved Hitler's Brain.
Saved Hitler's Brain.
Which I had on in the background once. I've been terrible. Here's where this stuff gets interesting. Nightmare in Wax. Oh, yes. Cameron Mitchell. See?
Cameron Mitchell. It all comes back to Cameron Mitchell.
Always. Then you got some familiar sounding titles. Prime Evil, which was literally on the other comp I just talked about. Satan's Slave, which was also on the comp I just talked about. Stanley, which I just saw for the first time recently. It's got some animal violence in it. Wasn't too hip on that. It's got Terrified from 1963. Never seen it.
That I saw not too long ago because there was talk of it having a giallo type. There was something about it. I watched it and couldn't find it, but it was entertaining.
Wait a minute. Wait a second here. Did I watch this already? No. You know what? I have it set aside for... I had it set aside for a very specific purpose, which... You proved to me is not a good idea, but I'm going to do it anyway. And then we got good old Terror, you know, again, Norman J. Warren. It's funny.
Yes, sir.
I think I'm only hanging on to this for Blood Mania, which I've never seen, and Nightmare in Wax.
I've wanted to do a wax museum sort of. There's Nightmare in Wax, Terror at the Wax Museum,
yes.
House of Wax, Mystery at the Wax Museum. Mm-hmm. You could throw Tourist Trap in there.
That House of Wax remake.
House of Wax remake. I think Simon is a big fan of Nightmare in Wax with Cameron Mitchell.
I don't know. Maybe. I don't know if I've talked to him about it.
I think that's true. I'm not making that up.
No. And even if you are, what's he going to do? Come on.
Yeah, I mean.
Come on. No,
he's in another country.
That's right. No, the value of these compilations cannot be like overstated. You and I are from that era of movie collecting in the early 2000s where it was suddenly very important for us to see these films, and downloading was in its infancy. So we were like desperate, and these companies
taking advantage of these movies with all their alternate versions and all the screw-ups mm-hmm. with the public domain. You know, Night of the Living Dead being the big example, where they published a print without the copyright and all hell broke loose. And so that's what happened with a lot of these films, which is why you keep seeing them over and over again. And it costs so much for these directors to prosecute that they can't. And sometimes no one even knows who owns the rights to these things. The person who owns the rights to it might be dead and all their assets are sitting, you know, with some lawyer somewhere. So, you know, it's crazy that we would go from shelling out $7.50 to watch a censored copy of The Beyond. And then just a few years later for what? At max $20. You're usually spending about $10 on these collections. And you're getting 50 movies and like 14 of them are good? Like what?
have decent transfers. Yeah. I know that when our neighbor Heather, when she did not like horror movies and I got her into them and I said the best thing to do is go buy you one of these budget packs.
Yep.
And she did. And she watched them.
Mm-hmm.
It was an easy way to build your collection, find stuff you like. Bell from Hell. This was the only way I saw Bell from Hell. The first
never seen anything but that Mill Creek.
Really?
Well, and
they put out a DVD that I did buy.
But you know, now we got to talk about what went wrong with these. What went wrong with these compilations? The first thing they did that was a bad sign to me was the companies started to put watermarks. So they started putting a watermark in so that other companies couldn't just lift their stuff or people couldn't rip them and put them up on YouTube without, you know, some proof of where it came from. But then the other shittier thing happened. They started putting out the same number of movies on less discs. So you got a disc that's double-sided. You got two movies per side. Maybe three movies per side. You're pushing it, right? Then you got these compilations that are like six or eight movies on one disc. And it's like, one-sided. And you're like, okay, so you can't even see they're so compressed. And that's where things went wrong. And I was very disappointed. Mm-hmm. So as soon as I discovered that, I stopped just grabbing these when I was at Walmart. So I go to Walmart, I'd pick up some new horror movie was out. I'd pick up some weird thing they had just put out for the seasonal horror movie stuff. So it'd be like, take your pick of whatever horror movie with an orange cover, you know, like it's a Halloween. And then I pick up a budget comp. $8. I never heard of these movies. Nope. I picked up, I picked up a Monsters of the Deep compilation and the movies looked like dog shit. I was so disappointed. So yeah, you got to find these compilations used now, which is very funny to me because they'll have the cheap stuff. But yeah, and the internet, of course. I mean, YouTube is the same. You go to YouTube, you search for horror movies, you sort by length, and then if you're really feeling saucy, you hit HD button, and you've got all these freaking HD horror movies that will be probably taken down in a month or a year or 2 years, and you just keep looking and you find stuff. The hardest thing, the saddest thing, is you find these Italian movies, you find these Spanish movies, you find these Japanese movies, and they offer to give you subtitles. So you turn on the subtitles and you're like, oh, these subtitles are in Japanese. Hit translate, automatic translate to English. What do you get? Gibberish.
Gibberish.
It's like I have found Gialli, I found Euro crime films, I've found tons of Japanese, just tons of Asian horror. And man, it's a bummer when you can't read what the hell's going on.
It really is.
But dude, this is such a great era. So even if you're not collecting these movies, there's so many ways, so many avenues to find this stuff now. It's wild.
It really is. Yep.
Well, dude, I'm glad you brought that up. That was excellent.
Yeah, thank you. I really enjoyed discussing this with you.
Yeah. You did it. So folks, like we were talking about, go check out bnsmovies.com, check out Groovy Doom, check out Drive-In Asylum. You will not be disappointed, I promise.
No, not at all.
Plus, you need a break from us, so go do something else, man.
Yeah, be productive.
Or not. I'm not going to go be productive.
No, me neither.
Yay. Goodbye, folks.
Good evening.
Hello, This Is the Doom Show is a proud member of the Legion Podcast Network. Please check out the other podcasts on legionpodcasts.com. If you'd like more Hello, This Is the Doom Show, go to hellodoomshow.podomatic.com or go to doomedmoviethon.com for the archives. If that's still not enough, go to @doomedmoviethon on Twitter. You can write in to Hello, This Is the Doom Show. Use the email doomedmoviethon@gmail.com. Doom Show episodes are available on record and 8-track cassette.